League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition as the Gophers are able to go into Evanston and tame the Wildcats of Northwestern in a 16-point victory. But before we get into that, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring our podcast once again. If you want to attend their final events of the season, for the regular season that is, use the promo code AXED5, AXED5. If you are not a member of the Goal Line Club, they will have a preview event on Friday. Word is that Blake Cashman will be there. He will be the featured honorary guest. And additionally, there is this trophy that they play for. You may be familiar with it. It might be what the specific promo code is named after. It will also be there. So if you want to get a picture or you just want to see it, maybe touch it. I don't know what you want to do with that. But make sure you make it to that preview event. Additionally, there is a tailgate as well. Again, AXE5, if you want to save $5 and you're not a member of the Goal Line Club. But I'm going to be honest, guys, sign up quick because there's not a lot of room left.
All right, Ryan. Whether it's for that or whether it's for the tailgate, I mean, the game is already sold out. And my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns, is joining us on this podcast as well. And Derek, do you want to tell me what you told Luke and I in the pre-production meeting? What are tickets going for? Cheapest on StubHub right now for the Wisconsin game?
I believe the get-in price at this time is $260 on StubHub.
$260? That's just ridiculous.
I think I saw that a season ticket goes for around that price. So the demand for a Golden Gopher football game has never been higher. And trust me, folks, we know you're excited about the upcoming game this weekend. We'll get into it at the end of this podcast. But Luke, first, we got a 2-score touchdown win to talk about first.
Yeah, so the Gophers beat Northwestern. They move. I think this is probably the most impressive thing for me on the season. They have 7 conference victories. I never thought that was going to happen. But here we are, Northwestern. They beat 22-38, a convincing win in Evanston. And I know, Ryan, you were there, so we'll give you first crack. I guess, quite frankly, what did you think of the offense's performance, Ryan?
Well, I love to see that they were able to bounce back, and they were able to bounce back in an efficiency standpoint more than anything. You look at the way that Minnesota was able to drive into Northwestern territory and not come away with just only points, but touchdowns at that. You look at against Iowa, Minnesota had 3 possessions within the Iowa 33 that did not result in a single point. That's what I always come back to, and I'm going to come back to with that Iowa loss. Why did Minnesota lose those empty possessions? Well, Minnesota has 5 red zone possessions against Northwestern, and they're able to get 5 touchdowns. The efficiency was back. You look at the third down conversions. Minnesota converts 9 of their 11 third downs. If you score on touchdowns in all your red zone possessions and you convert third downs at over a 80% clip, sources tell me from the Elite Football Minds knowledge database that you're going to win a lot of football games if that's going to be the case. And it starts with Tanner Morgan. I thought he had one of his best games. The way that he was able to come back from that concussion, and I can tell you this much, he did not get a ton of reps during the week. He got cleared late in the week. And the way he was able to come out and throw some absolute dimes out there to his receivers was impressive to see. Rashad Bateman is not going to be around here after the 2020 season. I can assure you of that with the way that he is just doing absurd things out on the football field. And you look at the record-breaking day that it was, Luke. in terms of Tanner Morgan is now the single season passing touchdown record holder, passing Adam Weber's 24. Tanner now has 26 on the season with minimum two games to go. Rodney Smith passes the 1,000-yard rushing plateau once again, and it's the third time in his career he's had 1,000 or more all-purpose yards. Plus, you have those two guys that you may have heard of, Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman. Yeah, they're pretty good. They both now have 1,000 receiving yards with, like I said, two minimum games to go. And we're talking about the number one and the number two receivers in Big Ten play in receiving yardage. Now, Brian Anderson could not have done that 3 years ago. And what Matt Simon has done with this room in terms of developing talent, getting talent, I mean, I put it on Twitter right after the game, back up the Brinks truck for this guy, because if he's going to stay, you're going to have to pay that man. But just the way that this Gopher offense was able to rebound against, say what you will about Northwestern's offense, but their defense had been pretty solid throughout Big Ten play. And Minnesota being able to put up a 38 spot on them was the second highest, only behind Ohio State. Eric, what did you think?
Well, it was interesting. I don't want to take anything away from the Gophers offense, but it was kind of a head scratcher to see Northwestern's game plan, frankly, on defense. You know, the Gophers have talked a lot about balance, and they're going to take what the defense gives them. And Pat Fitzgerald, being an old school coach, wanted to stop the run. And so they came out in the first half with a lot of very strong single high safety looks, loaded the box, even brought people off the edge, which I can understand trying to slow down the rush, but all Minnesota did, of course, was come back with slant after slant across the middle. And as well as the Gophers did, it's the one thing I think people are missing is a couple of those slants, at least two, if not three of those slants over the middle, because Northwestern was in single high, if they break one tackle, it's gone. So it's Minnesota executed, as well as they could, and excellent job in the first half, but I'm really kind of dumbfounded as to the strategy from Northwestern on defense, to be honest. And then in the second half, they had to adjust. You know, Minnesota had scored, you know, on nearly every possession in the first half, and they came out and they switched to a two high safety, and then Minnesota comes back with, brings in an extra tackle, and starts running the ball, and was able to run the ball quite a bit in the second half, which having a lead would really be their preference. So schematically, that's what Northwestern presented and how Minnesota reacted. And I guess just to piggyback on something you said, Ryan, you know, Tanner Morgan, we can give a lot of praise to him and talk about all the things he's done. One thing I wanted to point out is when these defenses go to coverages to protect the middle of the field, I think the biggest area that he's improved on are his sideline routes, things like back shoulder fades, corner routes. Those are the more difficult routes to throw typically. They require more accuracy. Those defensive backs, of course, are trying to squeeze the wide receivers to the sideline and not give them much room. And Northwestern's a fundamentally sound team. As you mentioned, Ryan, they're not a pushover on defense. And fundamentally, they did those things. But, boy, Minnesota's receivers and as I mentioned, Tanner Morgan's accuracy on the sidelines, there was just it really just didn't have an answer. Minnesota just continued to counter with whatever they would give them and just kept connecting all game.
All right, so obviously the Gophers were able to get the running game going. 39 carries for 212 yards. Ryan, what did you see? Pardon me, Derek, what did you see from that offensive line in particular that got that running game going, especially in the second half?
Yeah, well, in the first half, like I said, Northwestern went a lot of plus one in the box, and Minnesota did have some success, just kind of inconsistently, as you might expect with an extra defender. I thought that, you know, with a couple guys in particular, Blaze Andrews and Curtis Dunlap, after having a difficult game at Iowa, really came back and physically responded. Very physical play. I've been there, you know, after a game you don't play your best or you feel like you were overmatched by what was an incredible Iowa defensive line. You want to come back that next game and really show and really just give all out effort. And I think that's what we saw, throughout the Northwestern game. But as I mentioned, the second half, Northwestern changed schemes a little bit, and Minnesota maybe a little bit of a preview of what they might do in the Wisconsin game if given the opportunity. they just continue to get better with that heavy package, adding in an extra tackle, which forces the defense to defend more gaps. It offers some different looks in the play action we can talk about later that I think are there. And I think you add all those things up. And of course, I don't want to leave out the running back position. Those guys ran hard. All three got a number of carries. Mo Ibrahim continues to be a good downhill runner and also very good in blocking as well. So I'll add all those things up. And as you mentioned, Luke, they were able to add things to the stat line and kind of milk the game away in the second half.
Well, specifically, it looked like the outside zone game in that second half really got going. That's where you saw the Minnesota running game in the final 30 minutes of the game average over 7 yards a carry. Now, does Minnesota have good running backs? Yes, we've talked about that at length on this podcast, but the holes that these guys had to run through, specifically in the second half, they were absolutely massive. I thought that the tight ends had a pretty good game in terms of Co-Keefe was able to do some things. Bryce Witham was able to step in once Jake Paulson went down with that ankle injury. I'm not expecting Jake Paulson to be ready to go for next week, so that means you're going to see more Bryce Witham or Brevin Spanford. But it was the tackles. I thought Sam Schluter had a fantastic bounce back game. I thought that Daniel Faalele had two bogus holding calls on him that were, in my mind, completely hogwash.
Derek, I want to get your opinion. Did you think that they were hogwash as well as a former offensive lineman?
Yes. Yeah, in short, yes, I agree. And I just, in summary, inconsistent calls, not just against the Gophers, but just, again, kind of head-scratching calls throughout the game. But yes, to the holding, I didn't agree with those.
And that's where having Curtis Dunlap back was so huge, as Derek mentioned, because Minnesota is able to go to that jumbo package with the six offensive linemen, where Sam Schluter becomes your de facto tight end, as Andrew shifts over to left tackle, and you have to defend so many more gaps. And that's where you have three running backs that know how to read, they know how to get vertical, and they know how to do things in that formation. And that's where I think I'm going to be very curious to see how Minnesota deploys that against Wisconsin. Now, they had a lot of success with it against Northwestern. But once again, I even thought that the sacks that Minnesota gave up weren't necessarily on the offensive line. In fact, I don't think they were on the offensive line at all, as Tanner Morgan walked into a couple of things that he shouldn't have walked into, in my opinion. But I was impressed to see that the offensive line had a bounce back performance against what I thought was a pretty good defensive line. Now, Wisconsin's also got a pretty good defense, and so I'm glad that they have some confidence now going into the Wisconsin game, Luke.
All right, Ryan. So this is the part of the show where we actually stop real quick and we wait, because we really would like you to get on your soapbox and talk a little bit about when the Gophers offense sputtered, or, you know, maybe when the defense made a stand, and we are going to have to do these things called special teams. Ryan, the floor is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad you've gathered here today to listen to what is the gospel. The gospel that is Gopher special teams are absolutely trash. They are a complete dumpster fire, and I've been told that I need to keep this brief. Let's look at how the game flipped in the final 10 minutes of the first half. First of all, the punt return unit should no longer be called punt return, because it is not a return unit. It's not a block unit. It is a punt safe unit. Minnesota doesn't try to block the punt and never try to set up a return for what I think is actually a pretty decent return man in Demetrius Douglas, but he had one of the worst games of his entire life. So with 9 minutes left, Northwestern punts the ball. Demetrius Douglas, for whatever reason, does not fair catch the ball at the 28-yard line. He lets it go over his head, and Minnesota's pinned deep. Minnesota special teams then give up a safety because Tanner Morgan is pinned on his own end line. They're able to get a safety. Then the free kick gives Northwestern momentum, field position, and confidence. They get a touchdown before half. Oh, can we also talk about how Demetrius Douglas then muffs a punt, somehow falls back on it with fumble luck to start the second half? We've talked about it on this podcast, Luke, and you and I were texting about it during the game. The pooch kick against the kickoff return unit for Minnesota is the absolute kryptonite, because no one knows what to do. The returner is just god-awful at it. So you have a true freshman back there, Cam Wiley, in his second-ever kickoff return game at a collegiate level. Doesn't push the ball. It's 40 yards in the air, and Northwestern should have recovered it. It's an absolute joke. It hits a Northwestern defender, goes out of bounds. Oh, wait.
There's more.
We also have to talk about Demetrius Douglas then returning a kickoff. Gets a seam, gets stripped, balls on it again. The fumble luck for Minnesota in that game was absurd, and you should never count on that happening again in Minnesota's favor. You shouldn't. But it's just every single bleeping week, it's something different with something hurting the team. And I'm so tired of it. I don't understand why Rob Wenger at this point has a job. It's every week. It's not getting better. It's an absolute joke. And I appreciate everyone's tweets during the game. Trust me. I'm glad to know that you're venting with me. This is, as Paul Allen would say, a therapeutic Davenport of love as we try to get through this together. But Derek, did I miss anything with what once again was an abysmal special teams performance outside of Michael Lance regaining the kicker job and hopefully getting some confidence for next week?
No, I think you've got it, Ryan. The only one I just want to echo is, you know, the one I think hurt him the most was letting the punt go in the first half, pinning them back. And the thing that's most frustrating to me is that same thing happened earlier in the year. I can't remember which game, but we talked about the fact that if you have that much field behind you, I don't necessarily blame Demetrius in that case. He has to be lined up correctly, and there has to be a coach, someone in charge of that, who's marking things off to get him in position. Against a rugby-style punter, at the very least, you can let the ball bounce in front of you and then decide whether you want to catch it off the bounce or let it go. The ball went over his head, and that's just not at that position in the field unless the guy booms a 70-yard kick out of nowhere, low-line drive, something like that. It just shouldn't happen, and that really hurt him. Turned into a safety and an extra possession for Northwestern.
I do appreciate you, though, calling out Michael Lance, because I thought he looked actually quite good in this game. As the resident kicking expert that I like to, you know, proclaim myself.
Jacob Herbers didn't have an awful punt.
Yeah.
The offense was so good, he was only forced to punt one time. Heaven forbid it went over 40 yards, which, sweet Moses, it did. And then it was also inside the 15. So I can't really sit here and say anything negative about Jacob Herbers, but I think if you're going to take anything away positive from it, as Luke, you just mentioned, it's that hopefully Michael Lance has some confidence, because Minnesota is going to need him to make some big kicks next week against Wisconsin.
Yeah. And, you know, he was hitting the ball really well, you know, just like, you know, you crush a drive or you hit a pure iron shot on the golf course. He was definitely hitting it pure off the Herbers hold. So I'll give him some kudos. I didn't think it was a complete dumpster fire, all of special teams, in particular, just Lance. All right, Ryan, can you give the good people, now that you're getting off your soapbox, a word, from Burns Insurance?
Absolutely. I can. So the Burns Insurance agency owned by my father, Bill Burns, wants to congratulate the Gophers on winning 10 regular season games for the first time since 1905. It's been 114 years, and he wants folks to rally around this Gopher Nation, as he's hoping that the Badgers are going to fall to Minnesota on Saturday so that Minnesota can claim the Big Ten West title for the first time ever. So just as the Gophers are going to try to protect the Axe on Saturday, the Burns Insurance Agency is going to protect your business, home, or autos. Now, the Burns Insurance Agency will set up the winning game plan for you to protect your assets against life's mistakes and mishaps. So if you feel so much inclined, and I would strongly favor you to do so, please get in touch with my favorite local independent insurance agency in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. They're offering elite savings, elite coverage, and above all else, elite service. So check them out at insurancebyburns.com. If you are looking to get a free quote on your home, your auto, your boat, whatever it may be, from a Golden Gopher fan that is local here in the Twin Cities, check out insurancebyburns.com. That is insurancebyburns.com.
I think the question this week you really have to ask yourself is your insurance agent better dead than red? That's the real question you need to ask yourself. And if not, you can call Insurance by Burns. All right, Ryan.
Yep.
Here we are. Gopher defense somehow struggles with the backup quarterback once again. It's kind of a trend. You know, they did enough, had a great first quarter, you know, no points in the first quarter. But then we had something called Andrew Marty come in, who led them in rushing. I don't know if that threw them off, etc. I thought they mostly played well, but I'm curious to get you guys, who are much smarter than me when it comes to football, your thoughts on the Gopher defense yesterday.
I think that it was worse on tape than it actually was. And I was kind of surprised to get into the stats afterwards and see that Northwestern really didn't move the ball particularly well on the day in terms of, if you look at their yards per play, I believe it was around 3. And I know it felt like a lot more than that because Minnesota's defense had issues getting off the field. They were 7-15 on third down. I'll say this, the two scoring drives that Northwestern had before fourth quarter garbage time were 14 and 15 plays. And Northwestern was dead set on establishing the run down either 16 or 24 or 22 points for most of the game because they have absolutely zero faith in what was a completely anemic passing game. And to me, Derek, it just looked like once Minnesota built that 2-touchdown lead early on, Joe Rossi was incredibly content with saying, hey, if you want to establish the run against us and watch that clock burn, we're more than happy to do so and get out of here healthy. What did you think of what Joe Rossi showed early on, which I thought was a very aggressive style of defense, and how did you see it evolve as the game kind of went forward?
Well, yeah, I think that they didn't want to make the same mistake they made in the Iowa game, which was being conservative particularly in the first quarter. And so it was nice to see them come out very aggressive, whether it was run or pass blitzes. They moved the defensive front quite a bit early in the game and really just shut down Northwestern. Now, as the game went on, they're kind of, and this has been the last few games for Minnesota, starting to see a bit of a trend. When they have a called movement, so a blitz, a stunt, a twist, something, whether that's aimed to stop the run or the pass, they've been very aggressive. Where they've suffered a bit is when they're playing base. So they're playing more of a read and react, being gap sound, simply defending. They've been inconsistent in those looks. And I think as the game went on against Northwestern, I think you're right, Ryan, they were content to, you know, keep everything in front of them. They weren't going to give up any big plays. And I don't think they gave up one explosive game. I think there was one explosive play in the entire out of the Northwestern offense. So they were content doing that. Even down, you know, in the goal line area, it was, you know, interesting that Northwestern kept running with 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, but then kept running the ball. So it just showed you that they had a real deep lack of faith in their passing game. And I think you're right in that Minnesota, you know, kind of, you know, wanted to let them take small bites if they could. So I think that I was happy to see the aggressiveness in the first half. I was happy to see that they, you know, were able to limit the explosive gains. But the only thing, I guess, negative that I can say is defense requires intensity. It requires a lot of fire and a lot of passion. Unlike offense, which is more methodical, and I don't know, and Ryan, you're probably closer to this than I am. I don't know if they're a little bit banged up now or if they're through game 10. They've had some they've had an intense run of games, you know, with Penn State, Iowa. They just looked the intensity was just somewhat inconsistent. They would flash on some plays, Antoine Winfield, certain guys, and then other plays, they just seemed to be kind of catching, reading and reacting. And so, to me, that just says maybe they're a little tired, maybe a little bit banged up and just for inconsistent. And I think that showed a little bit in some of the tackling in the second half as well. So if I had to lob a little bit of criticism, I think that's where I would do it. But overall, in the second half, they just weren't going to be aggressive. They weren't going to dial up, you know, a lot of those blitzes and things that they had in the first half because of the multi-score lead and the fact that they wanted to limit the big plays.
Well, I will say, and I talked about this with you guys in the pre-production meeting, that I was there in Northwestern. And for those of you who were also there in Evanston that day, there couldn't have been more than 4,500 people in the stands at its peak. It was an absolutely dead atmosphere. And we talked about that in the preview edition, where you go from a sold-out Kinnick Stadium 1 week, at 2:30, 3 o'clock, to the next week, you're going to be going against a 2-win Northwestern team where the atmosphere was flatter than flat. And so that's where I can see, as you know, Derek, you can potentially fall into that trap, especially if you're a defensive player and you look up at the scoreboard and you're thinking to yourself, the way the offense is playing, there ain't no way we're losing this game. I don't got to give it my all. Now, I'm not saying that's what Minnesota did, but I can certainly see the emotional aspect of it coming back into play. Now, I got two more things I want to say before I kick it back here to Luke, that I think the defensive line played very, very well. We continue to talk about Sam Renner, but I thought he had one of his best games. The way he continued to flash as a disruptive three technique, a couple tackles for loss in the day. He was a nuisance against both of the guards all day long. And you also saw Keontae Shad flash there for a tackle for loss as well. And I can't say enough good things about Keontae Shad and what I think about him going into that 2020 season to replace Sam Renner. Then you also have Mr. Consistency, that being Carter Coughlin, who I think is playing the best football of his entire career right now. He is playing the run so incredibly well. And I want to get Derek's thoughts on that. But I also want to state that Carter Coughlin has had a tackle for loss in 7 straight games, and each one of those have been Big Ten games. You know how incredibly tough that is to do? It's astronomically tough unless you are a fantastic football player, which Carter Coughlin continues to be. When I see Boye Mafe get on the field in these passing down packages, that'd be number 34 and number 1 in Derek Burns' heart. All he does is make splash plays. Now, it may not always show up in the stat sheet, but what he's doing on the interior against those guards and those centers is something special. But Derek, what did you think about Carter Coughlin and the way he continues to play so consistent against the run right now?
Well, I think it comes down to one thing I can point out: his ability to read and recover and play out of his, you know, over and out of his gap, I think is what separates him. And I'll give you an example. If he's at a defensive end, and there's running action away from him, his job or the job of that defensive end is typically to squeeze. So they keep their shoulders parallel to the line of scrimmage. They watch and read and react to the running back and the quarterback. But they shuffle down the line and squeeze. And what normally happens is if something comes back their way, whether it's a jet sweep, whether the running back cuts back or the quarterback keeps and they're running outside, most defensive ends get beat by that. And so it's somebody else's job to be a force defender, a corner, or a safety to come up and stop that play. The way he's able to squeeze, and then when there's action comes back at him, he turns and chases down those running plays. It's just, he does that better than anybody. And there were several times on Saturday he was able to do that. And it's just adding in another defender who's not, quote unquote, supposed to defend that type of play. That's not his play to make. If that's, you know, if you get my drift. And so the way he's able to turn and run, and it'll come up again on Saturday with Wisconsin, who likes to run counter. They like to run outside zone. There are going to be plays where those defensive linemen, and I think not just Carter, they've all done a really good job of this, being able to run and chase down the line of scrimmage and be there as an extra defender. It's going to be very important. And he's done that just excellent.
So there's one more thing I want to talk about defensively before I see if we want any parting thoughts from this game, is that I had my guy, Ryan Tibbetts from the Minnesota Sports and Information Department.
I don't even want to know where this is going. This isn't bode well for me.
So Luke, it's your favorite game.
Yeah, I know.
Go for trivia.
And Brian Banks is just going to tweet at you about this again, just for the record.
Minnesota, their defense is allowing 300.1 yards a game, which is tremendously good. All right? If you allow 300 total yards a game, you're going to win a lot of football games. It's almost like Minnesota's 10-1 for a reason, and it's not solely the offense. So, Luke, when was the last time Minnesota went through an entire football season allowing 300 yards or less?
Well, it's 2019. The Gophers haven't been this good since the 60s.
Yeah?
So probably take that and subtract another 40 years. I'm going to go 12.
You were so close when you talked about the 60s.
Shoot, come on, really?
1967 was the last time Minnesota allowed 300 yards or less per game. So if my University of Minnesota education is correct, I believe that is 52 years. So yes, it's frustrating at times with this defense, and they've had their moments that haven't gone so well against them, but they are not giving up a lot of yards. And if you're not giving up a lot of yards, you're not, probably not giving up a lot of points. So especially compared to what we've seen even last year with that Rob Smith defense giving up 40-plus points a game, what Joe Rossi's been able to do this season, and even against Northwestern. Now, I know it wasn't great. No one's trying to tell you it was great. They have to make a lot more tackles or else Jonathan Taylor is going to turn a 2-yard gain into a 62-yard game on Saturday. But they have been doing the two things that Joe Rossi wants his defense to do really well, and that's limit the run and that's stop big plays. So, Derek, do you have anything more on the Gopher defense, the Gopher offense, special teams?
No, I think we're good. I'm good. All
right. Luke, I do want to ask you about Rashad Bateman, either one of you guys. I can't go through this entire thing without talking about Bateman, because some of the catches he made, and to see them live, and to then go back and GIF rewind it for all of you lovely people at Gopher Illustrated, it's absurd what he was doing on Saturday. And I really don't think even the statistic did him justice with some of the things he's able to do with his footwork in terms of a release off the line, a release out of his route, or to somehow have the wherewithal to make a catch extended away from his body and then toe tap on the sidelines. I just want to give you two both a platform to swoon about what I think is the best Gopher offensive athlete since Lawrence Maroney.
I don't think there's much to say other than I had fairly high expectations because I talked to Ryan Burns on a fairly regular basis, and he pretty much talked him up quite a bit, and he exceeded any and all.
This podcast, you no way, shape, or form, because all the people you, my lovely subscribers at Gopher Illustrated, love to do is just remind me of all the misses throughout the years.
So, you nailed this one for everyone that you've missed, and I've given you countless crap for. You absolutely nailed this one. He has been better than advertised. At this point, I'm not anywhere close to an NFL draft Bobo, but he has to be like a borderline first round pick, right? Coming out as a junior. Like, he just seems right. Obvious.
I mean, for me, he's certainly going to warrant top 60 consideration, which would be the highest a Gopher receiver had been selected in many, many years. And for those, I got a lot of questions after the game. Should we be worried about losing Rashad Bateman?
Oh, he's gone.
He is here minimum until after 2020. He's not going after this year. He can leave after your third year of eligibility. But, Derek, even the discussion we're having, Luke and Derek, you remember just 3 years ago us moaning and complaining about how Gopher receivers could never win a 50-50 ball. How far we've come in such a short amount of time, and that starts with Rashad Bateman, Luke. Or excuse me, Derek.
Yeah, it's a couple things I would point out with Rashad. Many receivers, if you'd want to talk about NFL prospect draft status, a lot of receivers out of college either have the accomplishments or they have the measurables. So either they're a guy that's going to be a combine phenom, but maybe they didn't flash a lot in college. Maybe they didn't have the numbers, but they have their measurables. Or you have a guy that had all the numbers, all the stats, all the records, but maybe he's a little too short. Maybe he's a step slow. It doesn't have the measurables. But Rashad has both of those in spades. I mean, he's got them both. And the other thing is, he's from year one to year two, he's developed into a receiver. Again, many guys are either good before the catch. In other words, they're really tough, difficult to cover. They're good in a box. They're difficult in one-on-one. Or they're really good after the catch. So they're a receiver that, you know, they can kind of catch and run, your Rondale Moore, that type of thing. He's both. He's really developed before the catch this year. Last year, he had all the speed. If he caught the ball, breakaway speed, he could stretch the defense, that sort of thing. But he's just done better and better and better on those underneath routes, the back shoulder, the corner routes, anything. He's really developed and widened his game this year. And I've seen some people talk about the fact that, you know, he might be a first-round draft pick. He's at this point,
tell me how you really feel, Derek,
at this point.
Yeah. Tell me. He's just for as good as Tyler Johnson is, and I think Tyler Johnson, and rightfully so, is going to be going down as one of the greatest Gopher receivers in Gopher football history. What Rashad Bateman's able to do athletically is just, it's silly. There isn't a route he can't run. There is, he's got the deep speed. He's got the hands. You saw some of those catches he's able to make away from his body. It's, I'm very excited to see with another year of Matt Simon tutelage what his ceiling truly is. Because that's one of the things Kirk Ciarrocca talked about with us in the media this week was someone asked him, is Rashad Bateman a dude for you yet? And Kirk talked about how, I mean, yes, he is now, but that he and wide receiver coach Matt Simon were having a conversation this past week, and they both looked at each other and were like, this guy still has so much room to grow that he has a ceiling like, you know, potentially they haven't seen. And they coached a first round pick in Corey Davis. So it's a lot of fun to talk about a Gopher receiver that has the talent and he's being developed, unlike what Brian Anderson did for many years here at the University of Minnesota. And yes, any shot I can take at Brian Anderson is one I'm sure going to take.
So I'll close the Bateman talk with this. You talk about the backing the Brinks truck up for Simon, and I think that's rightfully so. But also, like, let's give Rashad some credit as well. He came in as a pretty skinny kid, right? And he mm-hmm. put in some work, and the strength and conditioning staff earns, you know, should get some credit there too. But as anybody that's played a sport knows, if you're going to, you have to be the one to put in the work, and he put in the work because he, as Derek pointed out, he has all the measurables. He has put on the size that he needed to compete, and that is part of what has gone into him being as successful as he's been this season.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was talking to someone after the game that's very familiar with one of the Gopher offensive staff members thinking that may or may not work with wide receivers, and they told me just that, with as good as Simon is, it's these receivers that deserve all the credit because they work so hard every day, they bring it every single day. In the words of PJ Fleck, they change their best. And they work their asses off. And it's something to where when you have someone like Tyler Johnson in front of you and you're Rashad Bateman and you see how good he is, you want to strive to be that and more. Or if you see Tyler Johnson, you're looking at what Rashad Bateman's doing. It's funny how competition can bring out the best in people. And that's what I think is happening in that Gopher receiver room. And that's even with a guy like Chris Hotman-Bell. I'm excited to see what he can do with a full allotment of snaps in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's talk a little bit quickly about the Goal Line Club once again. We talked about their preview event and the tailgate coming up for Wisconsin. There's not a lot of time to get into that because the time is limited and space is limited. But if you are able to get in, Axe 5 will save you $5 if you are not a member of the Goal Line Club. I guess the thing we overlook all the time is if you are a member, you actually do save quite a bit of money on those events as well. But we do have to talk about an event coming up on the 18th for the Goal Line Club. This is the signing day social. It will be the 18th of December. It will be at the University of Minnesota. I don't know all the specifics yet. I do know it'll be at 6 p.m. If you are a Goal Line Club member, and you can sign up now for the 2020 season, you'll be able to save money on this. Again, I don't know how much you're going to save, but this is the pinnacle of recruiting. Ryan is going to put in a ton of work on Gopher Illustrated. That's where you'll be able to check all of it out. And this is where, when he can finally decompress, he'll be there. You'll be able to pat him on the back for all the great work he did during the sprint that is the signing day. So make sure that you check that out. Sign up, whatever. It should be available online soon. We just got late breaking news this evening that it's a go. December 18th, 6 p.m. for all those people that were concerned about it being in the middle of the day. It is not. So make sure that you sign up early because I do assume that space will be limited. So
yeah,
make
especially
sure you
win 10 games, and hopefully sometime here in the near future, Luke and I have another special event to announce on that day that I don't want to get into too many specifics here yet, but it would be for Goal Line Club members only. And I can assure you, if you're a recruiting Bobo and you like, and you know the recruiting class beforehand, you know the names, and you kind of want to get into a little bit of story time with some people behind the scenes, you only, for that event potentially, wink wink nudge nudge, you would have to be a Goal Line Club member. So Yeah, I can tell you with less than a month till signing day, not only am I incredibly stressed out about the Wisconsin game this weekend and what the ramifications of that are and how that lead into potentially a Big Ten championship game. Well, say Minnesota makes it to the Big Ten championship game, PJ Fleck and his staff have 7 days to recruit, and then it's a dead period, and then it's National Signing Day. And I know from talking with some people here on the Gopher staff this past week, they're not only more stressed than I am, but things are incredibly fluid. And people that turned their nose at Minnesota back in the spring and summer are no longer turning their nose. And now it's a matter of their spots are very limited. How do things break? How do things potentially with a Big Ten West wide receiver transfer, potentially transferring? How does that factor into things? It's Luke, you have me very stressed out right now.
Sorry.
I'll tell you this much, as Luke noted too, I'll be there at the social. As many of you know, if you just come up to me at the social, there's a very good chance I'll tell you everything you want to know, because it's now come and gone, and I have a chance to have a nice adult beverage in my hand and decompress after what's going to be a very stressful time at Gopher Illustrated. But before we get to that, even Luke, we have to talk about the X this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Derek, you all frequently talk to us about how you got to be playing your best football going into the end of the season, and you play some meaningful games at the end, and hopefully that, you know, is for the right to play for a championship. And that's exactly what the Gophers get to do this weekend. I don't think that the stakes could be higher with College Game Day being there for the very first time at the University of Minnesota. This is for the Big Ten West, for the right to play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. You know, if you're able to pull a magical upset there, maybe College Football Playoff, additionally possibly a Rose Bowl as well. Everything is in front of them, Derek. So speak to us, one, about the ramifications of going into a game like this, but then, you know, maybe what you expect to see out of the Gophers in this matchup in general against Wisconsin.
Well, we talked about it earlier in the season, with the Gophers going undefeated on their streak. You know, kind of the outside noise gets louder and louder, and I'd be hard pressed to find a week in these guys' career that it's going to be louder than this week. And that starts with, I can imagine, media day is usually Tuesday, which normally involves, you know, some interviews and some, be it in person, sometimes with out of town press, but this week they're going to be doing those interviews for College Game Day. There's going to be a lot more background that goes into that. And it's going to be just, everything's going to be magnified. So the ability for those guys to focus is just key. I think we touched on earlier in the year, you actually have to take mental energy and put that towards maintaining your focus. You can't just ignore. You can't just push things aside and, you know, just keep with your routine. You actually have to take mental energy to focus and try to, you know, focus in on what you have to do and just take it literally hour by hour, you know, minute by minute. And so that's what they've done a really good job this year preparing for each and every game and being ready. So I don't doubt that they're going to have things the same way this week. But it's going to be, you know, there's so many layers, as you mentioned, Luke. And so if I had to just, you know, put in my angle and talk a little bit about what we might see in the game, I still think for Minnesota's offense, there's a lot of, there's still a lot they haven't shown. I talked about it a few weeks ago, and I'll just continue to say it until they run it. But there's a lot specifically in the play action game that they haven't shown. I don't know if they're, well, I would guess that they're sitting on it and waiting for the right moment. That heavy package where they bring in an extra tackle, the wildcat package at times, the short yardage in particular, there's a lot of play action they could run out of that they haven't shown yet. You know, this past game with Northwestern, they split out a receiver. It wasn't wildcat, but it was that short yardage package. There's some things they can do out of that formation where they get that receiver, they get that free safety who's playing in the middle of the field to come up and play run. And if he does the way Northwestern played it, if Wisconsin does the same thing, there are some things they can do in play action that could amount to big time plays. So I'm excited to continue to see what they unfold. On the other side of it, you're facing a Wisconsin team, and particularly Wisconsin offense, that really demands that defenses be fundamentally sound. So if I were, you know, what I'm going to be looking for on Saturday is everybody on defense has to maintain their gap, because Iowa, we saw a couple weeks ago, and Wisconsin's very much the same thing. They have a style of running that will find the undefended gap. So if you get out of your gap, or if they run some run blitzes, if they do some twists and stunt, they have to be really sound with that, because if you leave a gap undefended, that's where that zone scheme is going to find that, and they're going to hit the crease, and it's going to be an explosive game. So, and then last thing I would say, and this is very conventional, kind of cliche, but when you're facing a power running team, particularly a back like Wisconsin has, you have to tackle with multiple personnel. You can't, many times, not going to be able to bring someone like that down in that type of scheme, you know, one-on-one in the open field. You've got to bring multiple people, multiple population to contain that. And as Ryan's talked about all year, they've got to contain the run, but keep everything in front of them, limit big plays. A 4-yard gain might not be a bad thing, you know, if they can have that play in and play out, and then jump up and get a minus yard gain once in a while. The Gophers defense, that might be enough, and they'd be excited to see what they can do on offense.
Well, that's where Jonathan Taylor, and for those of you who may be living under a rock, or you don't know a lot about Big Ten football, and you're joining the Gopher Gridiron Radio bandwagon here as Minnesota's 10-1, welcome. But Jonathan Taylor, for my money, he's the best Wisconsin back we've seen in some time. And I'm well aware of the Melvin Gordons and the James Whites of the world, but Jonathan Taylor in this running scheme is sensational. And as Derek alluded to, if someone is not in their gap, Jonathan Taylor is elusive enough to make you miss, because if you're not in your gap and you try to do somebody else's job, he's going to make you miss, and then he's got the deep speed to take it to the house. So you have to be gap sound and fundamentally sound on Saturday. And that's where I think it comes back down to, Luke alluded to in the beginning. I mean, this is the biggest Gopher football game in, at least 60 years. Now, say what you will about 2014. There were two top 22 teams going at it. There just wasn't the ramifications of this game like there's going to be on Saturday. And number one, as it was announced on Saturday night, College Game Day will be in town. And while the location has not been firmed up, I can confirm that it's looking likely that Northrop Mall is going to be the location for that. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's right next to Kauffman Union there. It should be a great place for them to have it, with either Kauffman in the background or the mall itself in the background. That's where, if I was a betting man, and many of you know I am, that's where I would assume that College Game Day is going to set up. And it's the first time ever that College Game Day has been here. And for the casual football fan in this market, I think it's astronomical for it, because the interest around Gopher football has certainly never been higher in my lifetime. And there have been some spike seasons, certainly. But this is the first time Minnesota's won 10 regular season games since 1905. It's the first time they've won 7 Big Ten games ever. Ever. Yes, that ever. Also, you have to try and retain the axe for the first time since 1993, 1994. That was the last time Minnesota won back-to-back games against Wisconsin. You're also facing a Wisconsin team that's likely going to be ranked 12th, 13th. They're a pretty good football team. You also have the opportunity to take the overall series lead. It's tied 60-60 and I believe 8 ties, something like that. And maybe biggest of them all, it's for the Big Ten West. It would be the first time that Minnesota's won the Big Ten West since its inception a few years back. And they would get the opportunity to go play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. And I also believe that the winner of this game has the Rose Bowl. The winner of this game is going to the Rose Bowl, to me. I don't see the Rose Bowl selecting Penn State over Minnesota in that instance, especially with Minnesota having the head-to-head. You can say what you will about their resumes and whatnot, but I just don't see it happening, especially with the hype around PJ Fleck and his persona and what he resonates around this country. So, Derek, I have to ask you this one, because I'd be remiss if I didn't. Now, I know a lot of people are already starting to freak out about the weather. And I told Derek this in the pre-production meeting, and I'm going to share it with all of you as well. If I was not working in sports, I would be a meteorologist. I have literally been obsessed with the weather since I was at a very young age. I would have gone to St. Cloud State, taken a football scholarship, and I would have went into meteorology at that university. And here's what I'll tell you. And this also comes back down to, I pay attention to the weather a ton because I'm a hunter and I'm a fisher. And I can assure you that this, the weather system that they are projecting to come in on Saturday is currently sitting out over the Pacific Ocean right now, if it's even reached there. And these models and everything, it's very, very inaccurate as of this time. Now, may it end up snowing on Saturday? It certainly might. But I'm not a big believer that snow, unless it is absolutely dumping snow during the game, I'm talking 1 to 2 inches an hour, I don't think snow really does a whole lot. But what I will say is this. Derek, you've played in some field conditions that have been less than ideal. When you've played in the snow and you've played in these wet conditions, I know a lot of folks think that favors Wisconsin. I don't think it necessarily does. In fact, I don't believe it does at all compared to what Minnesota can do with their passing game. And by the way, Minnesota can still run the ball pretty effectively. But when you are playing in those slippery conditions, do you take notice of that, especially for someone who played at a high level like you? Are you more cognizant of it, and is that affecting your play at all?
You know, in my experience, I really think that unless the conditions are extremely wet, so I can think of a game I played at Northwestern, really just a downpour throughout the game. That had an effect on the game because everything, jerseys, the field conditions, everything is wet and very slippery. That had an effect. But precipitation, you kind of hit on it. Precipitation doesn't really have an effect, in my opinion, doesn't really have a big effect on the game. Now, unless it's, like you mentioned, a really heavy snow coming down that's affecting, you know, things like visibility, or, you know, it's really going to affect, you know, the you know, players on the field. I don't, my experience, that hasn't really been the case. I think wind has more of an effect than anything. And then second to that would be field conditions. And now with all of these fields having the synthetic surfaces, mud isn't an issue. That, you know, that's probably a bigger factor than anything. The field's not going to be frozen. So I don't really think so. I don't think it's a big factor. And I don't, you know, the conventionally people would say, you know, it's going to favor, if bad conditions are going to favor a team that runs the ball. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think maybe windy conditions might affect or favor a team that runs the ball. But overall, I can't say that, and even temperature, to be honest, I don't think it ever really had a big impact.
And even if it is snowing, how cool would that be for the country to see? Because it's not going to be, I think the worst thing that could happen, the worst thing for just the Minnesota, everybody thinks it's a cold and barren wasteland. It's going to be 34 degrees on Saturday. Every one of you listening to this has probably been to Minnesota or experienced the cold at some point in your life. 34 degrees is nothing. If it is snowing, how cool is that scene going to be for the country to see on College Game Day? Thousands upon thousands of people packed for College Game Day in the snow. I think that's going to be so, so cool. Again, don't worry about the weather right now. Pay attention to the weather Thursday night into Friday. And Derek even pointed this out to me, and I think it's a fantastic thing to kind of end the weather rant on, is that even if it does snow on Saturday, say Cambridge, Minnesota gets 7 inches, there is a very good chance that that would be the heavy band and Minnesota could get 1 to 2. And if 1 to 2 inches throughout the course of an entire Saturday, many of you listening to those know this, it doesn't mean anything. I also want to point out that I've gotten this question plenty of times, the heating coils. Many of you think that the heating coils, the Vikings took them with when they left TCF Bank Stadium. That is not the case. There are heating coils underneath TCF Bank Stadium. So for those of you worried that it's going to turn into an ice rink out there, the field will be heated on Saturday.
We should propagate that conspiracy theory that there are no more heating coils, and that'll probably just get into the heads of Wisconsin Badger fans about the safety of their players, etc. I think that we should propagate that on the internet. Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. And I will. Here's the final thing I really want to touch on with Wisconsin. For those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. Luke and I will have a preview episode out before you go out for your Thanksgiving drives to go see your family. The Wisconsin defense is a much different defense than what you heard about early on. Now, the Wisconsin defense to start the season was pretty dang good. They pitched 4 shutouts in 6 games. Now, the shutouts were against something called Central Michigan, Kent State Golden Flashes, UCF, and Michigan State. Now, I don't think they're particularly good defenses, but pitching 4 shutouts is incredibly, incredibly hard to do. Since those 6 games, opposing offenses in the next 5 games, so Wisconsin's last 5 games, have scored 20 or more points in every single game. Wisconsin on the road has been a much different team defensively. They've given up over 27 points a game on the road in their 3 Big Ten games against, yes, Ohio State is in there, but Illinois is also in there, and so is Nebraska. And I think Nebraska was able to expose some things that hopefully Minnesota is able to take advantage of. So as good as this Wisconsin defense was early on, it's certainly not looking like what we thought it was going to be in those first end of September into early October. And I'll also mention that they're going to be potentially without some guys in their secondary. And that should be absolutely terrifying for them. Can you imagine trying to face what this – I mean, Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson against potentially a depleted Badger secondary, where their starting safety, Colin Wilder, was ejected last week. He's going to miss the first half. Their starting safety, Reggie Pearson, did not return, I believe, after suffering an arm injury. And their starting corner, Bayon Hicks, did not return to their game yesterday because of a concussion. So if they're without potentially 3 starters in their secondary and it's a little slick on the field, I'm going to probably side with Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson.
Quick question, though. Are they going to be without Dave Aranda, too?
Dave Aranda is making all of that paper down at LSU, and rightfully so. He's the LSU defense.
Oh, he left? When did he leave?
He left a couple years ago. Luke, you're such a bot.
Sorry. That's such a bad bot.
But, I mean, I think we should end on this, and that's everything that we hoped when we started this podcast, Luke, is this week. I mean, it is encapsulated in this week. You have College game day in town. You're a top 10 team in the country. You're playing for the Big Ten West. You're hoping to retain the axe. The Rose Bowl is right there for you, and so is the Big Ten Championship. For those of you who have been Gopher football fans for the scope of your life or just one day, I want you to soak up this entire week. The anticipation of the game, the anticipation of College game day, knowing that here we are with 1 regular season game remaining, and your Gopher football team is a top 10 team in the country. And it's something like we haven't seen in a long, long time. And for all the mediocre years and all the terrible years, to have this spike year, to see that this team, regardless of the result on Saturday, it's been such a special year. And you really hope that they can finish it off with a win over Wisconsin, because I don't know what happened in Dinky Town, but good googly moogly, it would be something special. Derek, I mean, this game on Saturday is, to me, the biggest game in my lifetime, my father's lifetime. To play in a game like this, or to, for you, even be just an alumni of this team, how special is it to just kind of soak in this week going up to the Axe?
Well, it has another key in that rivalry factor for me. I grew up in Minnesota. I played for the Gophers, really enjoy being a Gopher fan now. Anybody who lives in the Twin Cities will tell you we all work with Badger fans. A lot of people from Wisconsin live and work in the Twin Cities area, so that helps fuel the rivalry. And I would just, like you said, I would encourage people to really soak it in and enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the day. If you're going to the game, great. If you're not, you might want to take advantage of the tailgating or College game day, or whether you're hosting a party at your house, you know, do something, you know, go the extra mile and really, really take it all in. This is why we should all love college football. This is something unique about college football, with rivalries and big stages and the rankings and, November and how important these regular season games are. You know, it's just, we're finally getting to experience on all levels, all of those things. And these are amateur athletes. These are the guys that I can attest to give 11 and a half months of every year for 5 years of their life towards this and in a pursuit of, you know, athletic, what is ultimately entertainment for fans. And I just hope everybody enjoys it and takes advantage of it, is proud and takes it all in. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely. So per usual, we always end with, we want to thank everybody for listening. And especially this year, we want to thank you for listening. You stuck with many of us, like Ryan said, you know, some of you, even before the concept of podcasting was a thing, right? You stuck with this Gopher football team. And then since we started this podcast, I think in 2015, there have been some not fun seasons. And we want to thank you for listening all the way through that time. If you just joined the bandwagon, no shame, man, like welcome. Anybody's welcome. And again, everything's in front of this team. It's been a wild and fun ride. We want to thank you for listening. We're gonna do absolutely everything we can do to get a preview out before Wednesday, before you all hop into cars or catch planes or whatever to make your way to celebrate the holidays with your friends and family. So again, for Derek, for myself, for Ryan, we want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.